you.
Good morning. Thank you for being here today. This is my first time in Boston, first time at APHA, so very happy to be here today. So I'd like to start with a quick show of hands. I'd like to see how many of you experience communication challenges or language barriers in your own lives, maybe at home, at work. So it looks like many of you have. So today I'm going to be covering some barriers to accessing oral care that includes not speaking English, having a low literacy level, especially with medical and dental terminology, trying to communicate with patients that have autism, dementia, or difficulty hearing. Cultural barriers can also be present for individuals receiving needed oral health services. So there are many strategies to overcome these barriers, and I'll be going over approaches that are currently being used in the Virtual Dental Home Demonstration Project in California. The research was conducted as part of my fieldwork experience with Maureen Harrington, who is here today, who is my preceptor, and the Pacific Center for Special Care. So I don't have any relationships to disclose. The Pacific Center for Special Care is part of the University of the Pacific Arthur A. Dagoni School of Dentistry. The Pacific Center for Special Care improves awareness of barriers for good oral health and is developing the virtual dental home as a solution to improve oral health services for underserved people. Developed by the Pacific Center for Special Care, the virtual dental home, or VDH as we call it, this model brings much needed oral health services to communities that might otherwise receive no care. So here's our concept model, and the virtual dental home creates a community-based oral health delivery system which utilizes the latest technology to link practitioners in the community with dentists at remote sites. So the allied personnel travel into the communities and collect records such as x-rays, consent forms, and then upload them to secure online dental management systems. The dentist reviews the patient information and creates a tentative dental treatment plan. The allied dental personnel then carries out the aspects of the treatment plan that can be done in the community, like providing oral health education, preventive care, simple restorations, and case management. If the dentist determines that the patient's dental health has progressed, then the allied dental personnel connects the patient with a dental provider in their area. The allied dental personnel will conduct periodic on-site recall appointments to provide preventive services and establish a true dental home. Many barriers to obtaining oral health services are decreased or eliminated in this innovative model. So it's important to note that the virtual dental home demonstration project is implemented in a variety of diverse populations. Each population has unique challenges that are being addressed through customized plans which ensure that patient-centered care is provided. So here you can see that our sites are located all over California. We do have school-based sites and non-school-based sites. The top one is in Eureka, all the way to the bottom, school-based sites in San Diego. And this picture here is an elementary school setting, a hygienist seeing a patient in an elementary school, and that is in the faculty lounge where they set up. So oral interviews were conducted by phone with allied health personnel working at each site to gain insight into how language barriers are managed by the dental hygienists in the field. These calls helped us gain insight into the creative ways that each site is developed to communicate with non-English speaking families, the challenges that exist in regards to language translation, and areas where we could offer more support. We conducted patient, provider, and administrator surveys to evaluate all the different aspects of this project. It's important for us to provide the patient satisfaction surveys in the preferred language of the patient. This took some additional research to ensure that we were customizing the language for each patient, even if they were the only patient at that site speaking that language. So all of our forms are translated into the preferred languages. So these are the questions that we asked each site in the interviews. We wanted to know how they managed the language barriers at their site. We wanted to know if a translator was needed, how were they selected, who were they, and how are they connected to the site. We wanted to know if additional costs were incurred as a result of the translation service. This includes the cost for a family member to travel and be present. And we also asked for specific experiences. So we found many strategies that work to diminish language barriers on site. We also learned that there are communication and cultural barriers present. including limited literacy even in preferred languages. So we'll review a few of the other barriers before addressing the language barriers to provide context to the discussion. And barriers are present for different reasons in school-based sites compared with non-school-based sites. For a child in a school setting, dental care may not be a top priority due to cultural reasons. The parents may have beliefs and experiences, including thinking that baby teeth aren't important, or thinking that everyone will eventually need dentures. In a long-term care facility with medically fragile patients, a hygienist reported that caregivers believe that getting enough calories and other issues like timely medication distribution are more important than brushing or rinsing after meals, therefore not seeing oral health as a top priority. Other barriers in accessing oral health services that the virtual dental home addresses is will we eliminate the need for patients to travel to a dental office to receive preventive services. Patients at school-based sites are seen in the classrooms or in other spaces, as you saw earlier in the faculty lounge, and only travel to the dental office when additional care is needed. At long-term care sites and regional centers, the centers provide assistance with transportation to dental offices, clinics, and hospitals. But for the most part, the hygienist travels to the location of the patient. It also addresses the issue of cost. Grant-funded, the virtual dental home system of care eliminates the cost to receive preventive oral health services. It also addresses limited time constraints. Many issues of limited time are eliminated because the allied health personnel travels to the location of the patient to provide care rather than having a family member take time off work to travel to a dental clinic. It also addresses low literacy levels. Health literacy is so important because if a patient cannot articulate their problems and needs, it will be difficult to obtain the appropriate dental care. So now we're going to focus on the language and communication barriers. At a community clinic in Pacoima, California, our patients are low-income Spanish-speaking, and all the employees are bilingual in English and Spanish. They offer supportive services for patients that have limited literacy. In our elementary school settings and the Head Start sites, they use school staff, including teachers and administrators, to help with the translation services. They also use the role of family advocates at Head Start sites, and family advocates, or they call them FAs, speak the language of the parents and are an important resource for communication between the dental hygienist and the parents. They also have Spanish-speaking dental assistants that help. So in our school-based sites, they're located in San Diego, Sacramento, San Francisco, and San Mateo, and many of the patients and parents at these school sites have limited English proficiency. So as an effort to connect with patients in their native languages, one hygienist in Sacramento is developing her Spanish-speaking skills on her own using Rosetta Stone. Other translation services utilized in Sacramento include the use of an online translation tool, and they also have the school administrator proof documents that need translation to ensure the proper dialect and terms are being used. In San Francisco, bilingual staff communicate with Spanish-speaking patients and parents, and family advocates, Head Start staff members, or teachers are present to escort the child from the classroom to the location of the dental chair on site. The center also has a language line that can be used as follow-up with a parent or guardian if needed, and no one is available to help with translation services. In San Mateo, the Head Start sites manage language needs for patients that speak Spanish and Arabic. There is a need for culturally appropriate messaging. And in the virtual dental home enrollment process, there was buy-in to the program by an Arabic and English-speaking parent who had kids previously enrolled. So this parent was able to act as an advocate and a trusted source of information and explained how the program works to the other Arabic-speaking parents in the class who were not previously interested in the services. So this trusted relationship allowed for parents in the Arabic-speaking community to learn all about the virtual dental home, and more Arabic-speaking families signed up. So these types of relationships can provide trusted authority figures that act as a source of information as families are reassure each other on any language or cultural discrepancies. So in our long-term care sites and the regional centers, for example, in Fresno, a skilled nursing facility, the hygienist serves English and Spanish-speaking adult patients. Many patients live with complicated health issues and cognitive impairments, which lead to many communication challenges. A patient with dementia in a motorized wheelchair with two cup holders loves Pepsi and drinks Pepsi all day. This behavior is causing cavities, and this patient currently needs 6 restorations. The hygienist recommended cutting down on the Pepsi or rinsing with water after drinking the soda. She asked the caregiver and support staff to help to provide water with the Pepsi to help the patient prevent more tooth decay. So it's not just the communication between the provider and the patient that's important, but also the communication between the caregiver and other health professionals that support the patient. So a caregiver monitors and controls what the patient eats and drinks, and in many cases oversees their daily oral hygiene. I also want to talk about limited mental capacity. In Eureka, in a skilled nursing facility and a regional center, many types of communication barriers are added to the language barriers. A Spanish-speaking young adult with autism had a very disconnected caregiver and was scheduling appointments on his own. So the patient would not show up to the appointments that he scheduled, and he would not follow up with the recommended care. So some patients do not have the mental capacity to coordinate their own care, so this hygienist brought the caregiver in to assist with the patient care plan and be present in all conversations. The hygienist started following up with the caregiver directly and having them present when communicating. She taught the caregiver about oral hygiene techniques and lastly had the caregiver demonstrate the care to show competence. The more transparent the communication is to the integrated care team, the more accountability there will be. In non-school-based sites, there are additional barriers present, such as age, mental capacity, and complicated health issues. It takes additional time and efforts to make sure communication barriers are overcome, and the spectrum, due to the spectrum of patient disabilities, customized care is necessary. So here's an overview of the patient satisfaction surveys that were returned by site. 166 surveys were returned out of a total of 542 for a response rate of about 31%. These surveys were filled out by patients, parents, and caregivers. In order to increase the number of returned surveys, incentive gifts were distributed to San Mateo and Los Angeles, and from the results, they're the last two on the list, it looks like the efforts were successful in increasing the response rate at those sites. The incentive gift was a little bag with a toothbrush and a toothpaste and a thank you note for returning the survey. So the populations that we were surveying are challenging to get responses from. Many families live part of the year somewhere else or may not maintain the same contact information throughout the year. At sites where we use direct mail to get the surveys out, the response rate was significantly lower, and those include San Diego and Eureka, which is not surprising to us for that method. So we did make some assumptions when we were creating designing the surveys. We thought that the individuals would follow the survey instructions and complete the survey if it was provided in their preferred language. We thought that the patients and parents would know if their child needed additional dental care and had received a referral. We thought that their contact information would remain the same and allow for follow-up communication when needed. And we also thought that the patients were more stable than they are in reality. When a patient is seen, they receive a treatment summary, including a referral if needed, in their preferred language. Parents were asked if children needed additional dental care, and the results were very mixed. After tracking the referral status in each respondent's patient record, it was alarming to find that more than a third of parents did not know if their child needed additional dental care. So of the 35% who reported that they did not know, we needed to know who these people were and why they didn't know if a referral was for future care was needed or not. Who were the 35% and why didn't they know about the need for future dental care? Well, almost half of them were Spanish speakers. And we haven't figured out exactly why, but we can see that language literacy is a problem. Populations served by the virtual dental home are generally low socioeconomic status, and especially in sites like San Diego, some of the families live a transient lifestyle, traveling between California and Mexico frequently. This makes it difficult to obtain follow-up care or communicate referral needs. There may also be a fear of authority because the parents' legal status in these populations that prevent individuals from obtaining the care that they need. So there's a need for education and meaningful communication to drive behavior changes that will lead to improved oral health outcomes. Using resources available at their sites and finding creative solutions are allowing the sites to adapt care to the specific needs of their populations. So moving forward, we need new ways to communicate. We need more visual handouts, we need videos, maybe audio recordings, phone calls. So we asked each site to find out what type of communication their patient population prefers to accommodate individuals with low literacy. Written correspondence may not be the best way to get accurate information about patient experiences, so we're considering phone calls, but this method also has limitations. So other methods that we've implemented to address the need for new ways to communicate include a flash alert in Denicon, the patient management system, that will notify the allied health personnel of the patient or parent's preference of communication, the preferred language, and if a parent is not literate. If the patient does not read, then a phone call or in-person communication is provided instead of written. Oral health toolkits were developed to provide useful resources that are currently successful. These kits are in electronic format, and we also provided hard copy materials that could be used chairside. So the health personnel were provided the toolkits, and we have been following up biweekly to share ideas and resources. So communicating in new ways that address the barriers present in accessing care will improve the number of patients and parents that understand their oral health services provided by the virtual dental home and hopefully increase compliance with referrals. So all of these examples show how successful integration into systems with trusting, ongoing relationships will improve population oral health. I'd like to give a special thank you to all of my colleagues in the room here, Maureen Harrington, Jesse Harrison Noonan, Paul Glassman, Mesa Namakian, and Bob Quaid. And if you have any questions, feel free to contact me at this email, and also please visit pacificspecialcare.org for more information. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Michelle. I would like to ask the audience to hold off questions until the end. Next, we have Stacy. She is from Tulane University. She got her master's in public health and social work. And currently, she is working with on a project called Head of Environmental Asthma in Louisiana. And today she will present to us Improving Pediatric Asthma Outcomes Among Immigrant Communities in Post-Katrina New Orleans. Please welcome Stacy.